Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The G7 used to be the G8. Barack Obama and a person named Trudeau didn't want to have Russia in. And I would say that that was a mistake, because I think you wouldn't have a war right now if you had Russia in.
Speaking last week at a G7 meeting in Canada, President Donald Trump.
It used to be the G8, and now it's, I guess, what's that, 9 years ago, 8 years ago, it switched over. They threw Russia out, which I claimed was a very big mistake, even though I wasn't in politics then. I was very loud about it. It was a mistake in that you spend so much time talking about Russia, and he's no longer at the table, so it makes life more complicated. But you wouldn't have had the war. Other than that, I think we're going to accomplish a lot. Our primary focus will be trade and trade with Canada, and I'm sure we can work something out.
This is Agriculture Today.
My colleagues and I remain squarely focused on achieving our dual mandate goals of maximum employment and stable prices for the benefit of the American people.
Speaking Wednesday to reporters, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell.
Despite elevated uncertainty, the economy is in a solid position. The unemployment rate remains low, and the labor market is at or near maximum employment. Inflation has come down a great deal, but has been running somewhat above our 2% longer-run objective. In support of our goals, today the Federal Open Market Committee decided to leave our policy interest rate unchanged. We believe that the current stance of monetary policy leaves us well-positioned to respond in a timely way to potential economic developments. I'll have more to say about monetary policy after briefly reviewing economic developments. Following growth of 2.5% last year, GDP was reported to have edged down in the first quarter, reflecting swings in net exports that were driven by businesses bringing in imports ahead of potential tariffs. This unusual swing has complicated GDP measurement. Private domestic final purchases, or PDFP, as we call them, which excludes net exports, inventory investment, and government spending, grew at a solid 2.5% rate. Within PDFP, growth of consumer spending moderated, while investment in equipment and intangibles rebounded from weakness in the fourth quarter. Surveys of households and businesses, however, report a decline in sentiment over recent months and elevated uncertainty about the economic outlook, largely reflecting trade policy concerns. It remains to be seen how these developments might affect future spending and investment. In our summary of economic projections, the median participant projects GDP to rise 1.4% this year and 1.6% next year, somewhat slower than projected in March. In the labor market, conditions have remained solid. Payroll job gains averaged 135,000 per month over the past 3 months. The unemployment rate, at 4.2%, remains low and has stayed in a narrow range for the past year. Wage growth has continued to moderate while still outpacing inflation. Overall, a wide set of indicators suggests that conditions in the labor market are broadly in balance and consistent with maximum employment. The labor market is not a source of significant inflationary pressures. The median projection for the unemployment rate in the SEP is 4.5% at the end of this year and next, a bit higher than projected in March. Inflation has eased significantly from its highs in mid-2022, but remains somewhat elevated relative to our 2% longer-run goal. Estimates based on the Consumer Price Index and other data indicate that total PCE prices rose 2.3% over the 12 months ending in May, and that, excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 2.6%. Near-term measures of inflation expectations have moved up over recent months, as reflected in both market and survey-based measures. Respondents to surveys of consumers, businesses, and professional forecasters point to tariffs as the driving factor. Beyond the next year or so, however, most measures of longer-term expectations remain consistent with our 2% inflation goal. The median projection in the SEP for total PCE inflation this year is 3%, somewhat higher than projected in March. The median inflation projection falls to 2.4% in 2026 and 2.1% in 2027.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Yeah, it was the study and the findings were just crazy.
Steve Bushke is managing partner and founder of Cornerstone Business Services.
We asked the question of what best describes your mindset around you selling your business. And there was all kinds of answers. We prepared, we did this, we did that. The number one answer was, I plan to sell my business when I'm physically and or mentally unable to continue. So that's, first of all, not a good answer. You know, and so the mindset, you know, some of the things that we found out from this study is, you know, 50% of them have to sell their business in order to just to live their ideal lifestyle or the retirement goal. So the pressure's on. It's not like, well, I could just shut this thing down, or if I sell it, great. It's just, the cherry on top. They need to sell. The pressure's on. They need to sell this company. And for the vast majority, it was their largest asset. So you're thinking, okay, they would know the value of their largest asset. And what we found was over 60% have never had any kind of a fair market analysis or valuation ever, let alone in the last couple of years, to actually truly understand what is their company worth in today's fair market, you know, in today's M&A marketplace. 32% said, I don't even know where to start or even who to trust. Like, I don't even know what even step one is. And 65% of them were tied. They said their identity was deeply tied to their company or being a business owner. So it's almost like having their, almost like that having their business was like their child or their baby. And 76% of them started the company. We asked, how did you get into business? And 76% said, we founded the company. So they burned this thing up of this idea and built it and grew it. And now, so you're emotionally tied to this asset. It's your largest asset. You've never done, oh, and by the way, you've never done this before. 90% said, I've never sold my company before. Or a company before, that this would be the first time. I don't know what it's worth. And, oh, I get one chance. I get one chance at bat to do it. And I'm going up against experts in the low middle market. I'm going up against private equity firms and corporate development teams, that this is all that they do. You know, I was just on a, I just moderated a panel 2 weeks ago at a national conference, and the private equity groups ranged from 3 to 5,000. They looked at 3 to 5,000 companies and bought anywhere between 5 and 12 companies. But I, as a business owner, never done it before. I get one chance to do it. So you can see how the cards are really stacked against the owner. And the owner in this, that's very, very good in what they do, is really the underdog when it comes to selling their company. And it's funny, the other things we kind of saw is reading between the lines is all these, all the traits that take, that make a business owner great. Again, as I mentioned before, you know, they're resilient, they've got grit, they've got passion, they've got problem solving abilities, they fix things, they know how to pivot and go in a different direction. All of those same traits make a business owner a really bad seller, because you can't trial and error a sale. You can't pivot, you know, halfway through. Oh no, that was no harm, no foul. There's, you know, there's no redos. It's mulligans. There's no golf in, like in mulligan. You know, there's no mulligans like in golf. They get one chance to do it. And when you look at all these things, you can clearly see why, you know, the odds are against them and why the closing ratio is only 20 to 30%.
Says it's an issue in rural communities and for small business.
I was just talking with a woman this morning. You know, she's in a town of 7,000 people. I grew up in a town of 3,200 people. You know, there's 5 or 10 companies in that market, that, and helping them. They were doing $6.5 million in sales. And yes, we can absolutely help those companies and run through our process. And if it's too small for us, we can help them find someone in their marketplace. We know a lot of different brokers and advisors all across the country that we can help. We want to make sure that they partner with the right firm. But yeah, these concepts and principles go across the board of multiple offers and planning sooner, talking to the right people, getting the right broker, M&A advisor involved. The only difference would be if it's $1 million or $2 million company or less, and the buyer's going to be an individual, you're probably going to put a price, an asking price on it like you would your house. But otherwise, all the concepts are the same across the board.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
U.S. agriculture is still facing an uphill battle in finding enough labor for their farms. Mike McCarthy, a specialty crop grower from Oregon, recently spent time on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., sharing his experience with this issue to members of Congress.
We're in a fruit growing area, and we grow apples, pears, and cherries, along with a lot of other farmers in that area. It's what you'd call labor intensive agriculture. Most all of our work is done by hand. Over the years, we've tried to hire non-Hispanic workers in the area, and that's never worked very successfully. We are 100% dependent on immigrant labor now.
He said one of the main topics discussed with elected officials is the steeply rising cost of labor.
Our big concern is the adverse effect wage rate which seems to be escalating. This is the rate we pay agricultural workers that we bring up through the H-2A program, and that wage is escalating at a greater rate than inflation. About 60% of our costs are labor. With the high adverse effect wage rate, it's becoming very difficult to be profitable.
He said many lawmakers don't understand how difficult farming is right now, and that's why it's vital for farmers to speak up.
Commodity prices have not risen significantly in a lot of commodities over time, but our costs have increased very drastically over the last 10 years, and it's becoming more and more difficult to really raise food in the United States, and I think it's a long-term conversation that we have to have.
The American Farm Bureau, in partnership with Farm Credit, has extended the deadline to register for the 2026 Ag Innovation Challenge to June 15th. Chase Heineman, Director of Industry Relations for AFBF, says entrepreneurs from across the country are encouraged to apply.
Farm Bureau's Ag Innovation Challenge is a nationwide business competition that seeks applications from startups, entrepreneurs who are developing unique and innovative solutions to the challenges farmers and ranchers are facing every day.
He says the competition is open to businesses of all types.
We've had innovators from all aspects of the agriculture sector participate in the past, everything from livestock, specialty crop, row crop, aquaculture. We're looking for companies that have identified a need in agriculture and have worked to develop innovative solutions to fill that need.
Farm Bureau, in partnership with Farm Credit, is pleased to offer significant prizes to help startups get going.
We're happy that we can once again offer $100,000 to the winner of the Ag Innovation Challenge, as well as $25,000 to the runner-up, and $10,000 apiece to the other two teams competing in the final four. We offer also a lot of other benefits from participating in the program, including different trainings, as well as the opportunity to interact with potential investors.
Visit fb.org/challenge for more information or to apply by June 15th. Chad Smith, Washington.
Finally, President Donald Trump in Canada recently for the G7 meeting on what's holding up a trade agreement with the Canadians.
It's not so much holding up. I think we have different concepts. I have a tariff concept, and Mark has a different concept, which is something that some people like, but we're going to see if we can get to the bottom of it today. I'm a tariff person. I've always been a tariff. It's simple, it's easy, it's precise, and it just goes very quickly. And I think Mark has a more complex idea, but also very good. So we're going to look at both, and we're going to see what we're going to come out with something.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
When the Wall Street Journal does five major series of the fraud, misrepresentation, let's call it misalignment, when the Justice Department has leaked out, made announcements of not only civil suits, but criminal suits, criminal investigations that are going on, maybe this place should pay attention.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert is chairman of the Joint Economic Committee.
And the beauty of it is this type of scale of waste and fraud being the largest in the entire country. Remember, our preliminary score from CBO of Medicare Advantage is $1,840 billion, making that bill the single biggest savings bill for a single bill in U.S. history. And I've already introduced it. You see the discussion, the debates going on in the Senate right now. But it's scary because you got to get up in front of the American people and explain, okay, this is Medicare. This is Medicare Advantage. What we're concerned about is not the health care you receive, your earned benefits. It's what the insurance company over here is doing. And that's why they're under criminal investigation. I'm sorry. It's uncomfortable. But our job here is to tell the truth and make the math work. We need a revolution in how we deliver services. Yet, Mr. Speaker, I will tell you right now, you look at the lobbyists walking up and down our hallways, they despise, the bureaucracies despise anything that changes their business models. And I want to extend the apology, Mr. Speaker. I know my boards were a little disjointed because they came out of order. But the concept was very simple of this presentation. It's three things. The scale of the borrowing. There's actual policy solutions that you can pay for everything we're doing right now. It will actually open up our brains, open up our minds, open up our calculators, and actually look at it. And that a number of the solutions actually don't need to be partisan warfare. Now, we'll turn them into partisan warfare because we care much more about winning the next election than we do saving the republic. Mr. Speaker, I'm in a 50-50 district. Now, I'm blessed. I represent a really well-educated population. They're fairly prosperous. They're smart people. And they've tolerated, not because they're thrilled about what I say, but I think they believe what I say. Well, I go to great lengths to get the math right. There is hope. There is a path. There's a solution. I also have one of my economists that makes it very clear. We may have only about 36 more months, and we start to hit what's called, referred to as sort of the interest rate feedback loop. Remember, a year ago, I think we had 3 or 4 months where this government had to borrow money to pay for our borrowing. If today the 10-year bond is at 4.5, you realize if it goes to 5.5, in 9 years, 45% of all of our tax collections are just interest. Let's not let that happen. Let's get our act together. Let's communicate to those people we borrow money from that we're serious on some fiscal sanity, because that's how you maximize the efficiency. That's how you lower the interest rates for every American. And that's how you give our kids and your retirement a future.
It's Agriculture Today. You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We can all write down a number, what we think it should be or what I need, what I want it to be. Nobody cares. At the end of the day, it's what will some group, what will some company, private equity firm, family office, individual, what will they pay for your company? That's it.
Trying to help small businesses transfer to the next generation. Scott Buschke, managing partner, founder of Cornerstone Business Services.
And what we've seen is a way to combat this. You know, think of it as almost like a teeter-totter where the owner's on the bottom. They've never done this before. All the things we talked about is this buyer looks at 3,000. They buy 5 companies. They know they have all the tricks. They know this. They do this every day. They wake up to buy companies at the lowest possible price and the best structure possible, put as much risk on the seller as possible. Well, if you can start the conversation earlier and get people on your side, so get an investment banker, M&A advisor like Cornerstone on your side, get an M&A attorney on your side, get tax people on your side. Now at least you're leveling the playing field. And what we do is we have our Assurance 360 process that we take clients through, or you know, the structured sale process. And when you can tell the right story to the right group of people, don't put an ASCII price on the company, create urgency and scarcity, create like an auction-like environment, and get all the offers at one time. That's what we call POMO, the power of multiple offers. So everybody's heard of FOMO, fear of missing out. This is POMO, the power of multiple offers. When the owner can get multiple offers, that's when all of a sudden now the seller has the advantage because he or she can negotiate with multiple buyers at the same time. And those buyers, you know that there's other buyers at the table. So if they truly want this deal, they've got to bid up. And in fact, we just literally signed in an LOI today on a client where they had a private offer come in unsolicited. And all these business owners are getting unsolicited offers all day long. And this is why. You know, they came in, they negotiated from $8 million up to $10 million. And they said, look, you know, we can't pay any more. That is our last and final offer. Take it or leave it. You know, we think it's a great offer. The owner said, well, you know, we're actually thinking about working with this group called Cornerstone Business Services. And we just want to make sure we do this right. And we're, look, we're going to keep you in the table. We want you might be the buyer at the end of the day. We just want to make sure we're doing it right. They sent that email out. And within 5 minutes, that buyer called back and said, literally, quote, what's it going to take for you not to sign with Cornerstone? After they just said, we can't pay any more money. Like, how much more money do you want not to sign? Because they knew if they got into from a buyer value, they got into a market value, that they were going to have to pay more. And we're signing an LOI today with the buyer that's paying $14 million, 40% more than what that initial offer was going to pay. And we've seen deals like that all day long. We've seen where there's an unsolicited offer. We'll bring other offers to the table running our process again. And because of that power of multiple offers, you know, the one that we just did, they got offers for 25 and 31 with an earnout, maybe could have got to 36. We did a deal. We worked our process, and 46 days later, closed at $51.3 million. So it's just amazing that how they can, if an owner starts a conversation earlier, understands what are all my options. It might not be to sell to a third party with Cornerstone. It might be transitioning it to your kids or management team, which is great if that makes sense for you. But what are all my options? What makes the most sense for what I'm trying to accomplish? And then really getting that fair market analysis. That's where we see that's the trigger event. Because once they understand the real value of what that looks like, now they can say, okay, it's $20 million. What am I going to net out of this thing? And what's the worst case scenario? What can we do to save, $500,000, $2 million in taxes? And then, all right, now what do I need for my lifestyle number? What we call it the lifestyle number. What's that wealth gap that people need to fill in order to live their ideal lifestyle? So if your net number is 10 and your lifestyle number is 8, now you know that, hey, we've got enough money, we can sell and live our ideal lifestyle. If it's flipped around, if your lifestyle number is 10 and your net number is 8, well, you've got two choices. Either lower your lifestyle down to 8 because you're burnt out, you're tired, you're sick, whatever it might be, or you go back up to step one of our process, which is value enhancement, work on a couple of things that we highlighted in the fair market analysis, and then we just come back around and until it makes sense.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is set to expire at the end of 2025. If it's not renewed, farmers and ranchers will face significant tax hikes. Samantha Ayoub, an associate economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation, says letting these provisions expire puts farmers at risk.
At the end of the day, taxes are an expense. We already see farmers and ranchers across the country suffering from above average input expenses across the board. And if taxes were to increase next year, that is just another hit to the expenses on a balance sheet that is already struggling.
Ayoub says several provisions in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act were designed to boost economic activity and encourage investments.
If taxes increase, that takes out dollars that farmers can then invest back into their business and back into their community. EY, a consulting firm, estimates that expiration of TCJA provisions would lead to agriculture alone losing 49,000 jobs, which is $3 billion in wages that then can trickle out into $10 billion of economic activity.
She says some progress has been made on making these provisions permanent, but there's more work to do.
We've seen the reconciliation package, the one big beautiful bill, pass the House, and it provided permanency, which is ultimately certainty, and improved upon a lot of the provisions that important to farmers and ranchers. That is obviously not a completed process. It's important that those provisions that were kept in the House continue into the Senate.
Data shows that American farmers and ranchers are getting older. American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall is set to discuss this issue as well as ways to address the problem with the Senate Special Committee on Aging.
According to the latest USDA Census of Agriculture, nearly 40% of all farmers are now beyond the retirement age, yet only 8% of farmers are under the age of 35. We should all be concerned about those numbers and the future of our family farms.
One of the ways Congress can support family farms is by updating the Farm Bill.
Our farmers need a modernized five-year Farm Bill. Issues like inflation, rising supply costs, and overall market volatility have made it harder for our family farms to hold on. This will help families stay in business and pass the farm on to the next generation. The Farm Bill also provides certainty for new and beginning farmers just starting out.
Duvall underscores that Farm Bureau recognizes the importance of supporting farmers at all stages of their careers.
Our Young Farmers and Ranchers Program, our Promotion and Engagement Program, and our Women's Leadership Committee gives farmers the tools to advocate for their own success. America has a rich tradition in farming, and we want to ensure that continues in the next generation and beyond.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Thanks, Chad. Now we go to the Fed Chairman, Jerome Powell, speaking to reporters on Wednesday regarding immigration.
One way to get at that from an economic standpoint, we of course don't comment on immigration policy. It's not ours to make or comment on. But what you see is an unemployment rate that has been really solid and at a low level, not really increasing. It's been in a good range and well within the range of mainstream estimates of maximum employment. And that means, like, part of that is that labor demand and labor supply are kind of moving down at the same rate. Labor demand is softening. You see that in job creation, but it's still kind of at a healthy level. And labor supply is diminishing because the immigration numbers that we see are much lower than they were. So those two factors, supply and demand, that's what has kept the unemployment rate in a reasonably, you know, stable place.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Mr. President, welcome to Canada.
Thank you.
It's a great honor. And this is the 50th birthday, if you will, of the G7.
Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney with President Trump.
The G7 is nothing without U.S. leadership, and so, and your personal leadership, leadership of the United States, many issues, geopolitics, economic, technology, and working hand in hand with the United States, Canada and the United States, and the other G7 partners with your leadership. I'm very much looking forward to the meeting and grateful
to
have you.
Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it, and we've developed a very good relationship, and we're going to be talking about trade and many other things. And we have a whole group of people, some traders and some other people. I see my top economy people. But we have a very talented group of people, and you do too. And I know they've worked together very well. I look forward to that.